Welcome to the Southern Naturalist Podcast, Nature Notes Edition. These are shorter episodes where we read and discuss interesting information about nature, written by Bob Thomas, a naturalist and environmental educator in the greater New Orleans area for 50 years. My name is Amae Thomas, and Bob is my dad. We're both professors at Loyola University New Orleans and naturalists and fascinated by nature and all she has to offer.
As the founding director of the Louisiana Nature Center, an avid nature lover who's a certified Louisiana Master Naturalist and a professor of environmental communication, I began writing nature notes based on natural history observations and in response to frequent questions.
And there are hundreds of these nature notes that Dad started writing decades ago, so we're excited to share some of our favorites. We hope to encourage more people to experience the healing power of nature and develop a stronger will to protect it as our home. This Nature Note podcast is brought to you in part by the Loyola University Center for Environmental Communication. You can find all of the Nature Notes and more by visiting our website at lucec.loyno.edu. Welcome, nature lovers. Today, we're going to talk about lightning bugs, and we're going to read Dr. Bob's Nature Note. Zach Lemon from Audubon Institute is going to join us, and I'm going to serve as the bug expert today. But before we get too into the episode, I want to read a short excerpt from a renowned Louisiana naturalist, Kelby Uchley, a book that he wrote that was published in 2011 called Bayou Diversity. I highly recommend this book, by the way, for people interested in natural history and especially natural history about Louisiana. He was awarded the Caroline Dorman Outstanding Louisiana Naturalist by the Louisiana Master Naturalist Association. Fireflies. Fireflies, also called lightning bugs, often evoke childhood memories of summer evenings sprinkled with the magic of fairy-like flashing insects drifting about in the highest treetops. To the fireflies themselves, though, the blinking lights mean sex and supper, and not necessarily in that order. I wanted to read this because it starts off all fairy tale-like, and then it immediately dives into, well, let's make sure we don't forget, nature happens. And so the evoking childhood memory part of summer evenings is just amazing, but there's so much more to that story. And that's why we wanted to do an episode on fireflies, lightning bugs.
Why do people love them so much? My gosh, I can tell you this. I can be standing by a bayou at night in South Louisiana talking about the red glowing eyes of an alligator in a bayou. And all of a sudden, somebody at the back of the group says, "Oh my gosh, it's a firefly!" And everybody runs off to go see the fireflies.
Yes, of course.
They're absolutely astounding. Now, they did the same thing for the red eyes of the alligator
in the beginning.
So it's attention span, I guess. But it is something that does excite people. And there are really kind of three major reasons why people love them so much. One of them is they produce light,
yep,
which is strange. You just don't see that in many things. They are the original femme fatale, which we will talk about. And then they have different color light sometimes.
Yeah, different patterns too, right?
Different patterns. Why do some flash and others flicker and others strobe? These are all questions that people have as soon as you start watching them closely, which is what we always do, right?
Right.
You know, when we see them, we don't just say, "Oh, those are fireflies," and we walk on.
Yeah.
We stop for a minute and say, "Let's look at them and watch them blink. Make some counts." We'll get back to that in a minute.
Yeah.
And I'll talk about how we kind of ask a lot of questions of our people when we're out in the field at night, because it helps them understand the animals much more. What is this thing about fireflies versus lightning bugs? Probably everybody out there has heard both of these being used, but they're both commonly used. It just depends on where you grew up, though. They're not really flies, but they're beetles, as we will discuss as we go through the program. Not all of them can fly. An example would be the blue ghost that stay lit up for about a minute. The female blue ghosts do not fly, but they situate themselves on the forest floor and glow faintly. They're common in the southern Appalachians. While all known fireflies glow as larvae, only some adults produce light. And not everybody knows that.
Cool. So entomologists classify fireflies, lightning bugs, in class insecta. They are insects. Furthermore, when you break down class Insecta into all the different orders of insects, fireflies fall into the beetle order. The order name is Order Coleoptera, and it's the largest order of insects. And the name is derived from the Greek words koleos, meaning sheath, and ptera, P-T-E-R-A, meaning wings. Well, we've all seen A Bug's Life, and if you haven't, you should go see A Bug's Life, and just because it's a great movie.
Finally, I'm a beautiful butterfly!
But to see how much of nature they got right, and of course, some things that are not so right. But when you see those beetles take flight, that right there is the essence of Coleoptera, sheath wing. The top layer, or the top wing, the sheath, is actually called an elytron, or for two of them, elytra, plural. And that is a protective covering over the membranous wing that is underneath that they actually use to fly. So when you see those on an insect and you get a better search image for that, you'll notice that those elytra have a straight line down the back of the beetle. And that, once you get that image in your mind, it's pretty easy when you see an insect out in nature to determine if it's a beetle or not.
Hey, when you watch The Bug's Life, it's going to be real obvious, because one of the beetles, when he gets ready to fly, it's with a big snap, it goes pop, and yep, those elytra pop up in the air, and then it flies away.
Hold on, Mr. Ant.
Amazing.
Yeah, and there's so many other cool things about elytra you can learn about. Google click beetles and learn how they use their elytra to make a sound and to protect themselves, all kinds of things. And just to give you another example of how entomologists name insects, the order Lepidoptera is all of the butterflies and moths. Lepido means scaly, and P-T-E-R-A again means wing. So all of the moths and butterflies have scaly wings, and so they all belong to the order Lepidoptera. So Coleoptera are the beetles, and Lepidoptera are the moths and butterflies. One more thing I want to talk about just quickly is about the way in which beetles grow and develop. They are what we refer to as insects that undergo complete metamorphosis. So that means they start life as an egg when the female lays them on or just below the surface of the ground. And then those eggs hatch out, depends on the species as to how long, but usually about 3 or 4 weeks later. And then they're in the larval stage. In the insect world, this is usually the longest stage of the insect's life. It's when they spend all their time eating and growing and developing, like a caterpillar. So they spend most of their life in the larval stage. Getting back to fireflies, most are specialized predators, and they feed on other larvae, they feed on snails, they feed on worms, and this stage can occur in one season or up to 2 years. They then hibernate in this stage, usually underground or under bark of trees, just depends on where you are in the world, and they emerge in the spring. They pupate, that's the third stage of an insect's life, when they're going through complete metamorphosis. So this is when they completely change their form, and then they emerge as adults very soon after and repeat the cycle. So it's pretty interesting to find out that in the insect world, most of the life is spent in the larval stage. They're eating, they're developing, whatever. But as adults, oftentimes they don't even eat, and that part of their stage of their life is actually usually pretty short. Now, some do eat, of course, but that's not the focus. The focus is to survive long enough, find a mate, reproduce, and then they die off. So that's pretty exciting stuff. And of course, this is species specific. So, and also latitudinally specific. You know, if you're further south you are, closer to the equator you are, the longer these stages of their lives will be, because the weather cooperates a little bit more, right?
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. But let's get back to the lightning bugs. Okay, so they're in a family of within the order Coleoptera called Lempiridae. There's actually more than 2,000 described species in this family, and it's all the beetles that we commonly call fireflies, glowworms, or lightning bugs. Let's get into the nature note that you wrote back in 1989 that is still interesting and still relevant.
Most of us cherish the memories of summer nights during our childhood when we played hide and seek and caught fireflies or lightning bugs. The bugs, actually beetles, were a curiosity and just plain fun, but their story is fascinating indeed. The special light they produce, termed bioluminescence, is exactly like that produced by comb jellies, some mushroom species, believe it or not, and all other life-producing life forms. A special substance called luciferin mixes with oxygen and produces oxyluciferin, water and light. All of the energy output is light. There is no waste in the form of heat, as in all human-produced light. This alone is truly remarkable.
No heat, no waste.
The whole idea about light in human lives is really important. I mean, we all have it, we all require it, we all need it. And what we're always trying to do is we're sort of chasing the holy grail of how do you have the most efficient light production. And believe me, lots of labs are always trying to figure out how to use this luciferin, luciferase mechanism to produce light that can be used by humans.
Yeah, that's awesome.
The biological purpose of light is to attract a mate to produce many more lightning bugs. That's very simply what's going on. The males fly about blinking while the receptive females sit on the vegetation and return the signal. So since the blinking of the light is a signal for mating, one might guess that each species has its own technique.
And do they?
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay.
And different signals, different ways to signal. Just like frog calls are different, they sound different, and there are different ways that they're attracting one another. These insects are doing exactly the same thing.
Yeah, so it's different patterns like you talked about earlier. You can sit there and you can count the number of times they flash, the length of time they flash, etc.
Yes, yes. In fact, it's fun to watch fireflies closely to see if you can detect those differences. And nothing's better for a naturalist than to sit and really look closely at nature and try to figure out really what's going on out there. What kind of mechanisms are being used? What you want to do is watch fireflies the way a scientist would. Go through a series of questions the way scientists always do and naturalists always do when they watch something in nature. So questions like, do they blink the same number of times before remaining unlighted? Do they use the same sequence of short and or long blinks? Do you see different blinking combinations flying at different heights? A fun thing for a naturalist to do is to try to figure out what's really going on in nature.
And then now you know that those differences you observe are these different signals, which indicate different species and different communications and things like that. So that's pretty interesting.
Oh, I think it's a lot of fun. But fireflies are carnivorous, as both adults and larvae. Since they eat other insects, it's not surprising to learn that some of them will mimic the reproductive blinks of other species. When they attract the other insect, they grab and devour it quickly. It's pretty gruesome. What a turn of events for the unsuspecting prey, thinking of love and becoming lunch.
So we had Zach Lemon on our first episode. He is just so much fun. He has so many interesting stories and ways to describe certain things, and especially when it comes to what we just talked about in the Nature Note. So we invited him to our studio to tell us a little bit more about thinking of love and becoming lunch. Zach?
Well, fireflies, at least the ones that try to find a mate at night, they glow, right? The males fly around, their rear ends light up, and there are species-specific signals that they will use. So if a male is flying and he flashes, let's say, two quick times and then one time for three long seconds, he's then looking for a female, usually at ground level or near there, to respond with, again, a species-specific signal. So there's this little problem that fireflies in the genus Photinus all have, and that is that there are other fireflies in a different genus, Photurus, that lure males in under false pretenses.
So Photinus and Photurus, very similar in name, but I'm going to guess a little bit different in rituals, behaviors, maybe?
Yeah, that's just it. So the Photurus female is able to mimic the Photinus female. Mm. So you're a Photinus male, you're flying around looking for love, and you're going with your light, basically, hey baby, who's interested? Hey baby, who's interested?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you look down and you see, over here, big guy, and you fly down, and if it's Photurus, the other genus, and not Photinus, when you go down there and look for a mate, you end up getting eaten.
Ah, yeah. Yikes.
Now, that's not only for nutrition, but it is suspected also to gain chemistry. chemicals. Most of the world's fireflies have very powerful defensive chemicals in them called leucibufagins. And they will keep most vertebrates from eating most fireflies.
Okay.
And it is thought, but I don't think proven yet, that Photurus lacks leucibufagins or a lot of them. So one of the reasons to eat a male Photinus is to gain that chemical defense as well as just filling your belly.
Nice.
Now, what's also interesting, and you know, it doesn't matter for the poor Photinus male that has now been swallowed up, is that later on, when a Photurus female actually wants to mate with a male of her own species, she produces a completely different come-hither light, and when the male of the right sort comes along, she doesn't kill him at all. She just mates with him.
So, because they're doing this at night, right, and using their light, they're not... That's what they're using to attract each other, right? So they're not using the color of their exoskeleton or anything like that.
There's nothing else like chemical involved, olfactory. It's simply fireflies can see well, they can recognize flashes of their own species, and those poor Photinus guys, they can get fooled.
Yikes. Okay. So that's interesting. So let's get back to the nature note and learn a little bit more.
Our world is full of trade-offs. Since we have controlled mosquito populations and developed more land, we seem to have fewer fireflies. Two places in and near New Orleans where they can still be seen are at the Nature Center in Joe Brown Park in eastern New Orleans and in the Barataria unit of the Jean Lafitte National Historic Park and Preserve.
All right, so let's elaborate on this idea about trade-offs. First of all, trade-offs are something, as a naturalist, you need to be thinking about all the time. And it helps you to, when you're making observations, you should always be thinking, you know, what are the benefits and what are the costs that are involved in whatever this organism is doing in nature? And we see that as well in the connection of course, us, humans, and fireflies. So, Zach, tell us about pesticides and habitat alteration that we just learned about that are two aspects that have really just degraded our population of fireflies recently.
Well, it's been a mystery to me for a long time. So I've been working at Audubon for about 30 years, and I'm a little over 50 years old. And for all of my life, as a professional entomologist, people have said things like, hey, I grew up here and there used to be a lot of fireflies and now there aren't as many. And so it's had me thinking and trying to unravel this mystery for a while. And typically these are people who are older than I am, but be that as it may, I've sort of come to a few different conclusions. Now the first and most important thing we need to know going into this is that we don't have baseline data.
Right.
Nobody was doing a census of fireflies in and around the New Orleans area in the 1920s and 30s and 40s and 50s. So if there are fewer of them, we can't prove it. We only have anecdotal evidence, which is not as good as hard data, as you know.
Yeah. So you're saying, like, for instance, when some of your friends who are older than you say, well, when I was a kid, we saw them all the time. And you're thinking, well, were you outside more as a kid? And now you have a job where you're sitting at a desk. So maybe, you know, I mean, that's what you mean when you say anecdotal.
Well,
of course,
that's
right?
Actually part of my answer.
I
was going to get to that.
Okay. I'm sorry.
And
I stole that from you.
No, that's okay. You know, when I say anecdotal, what I mean is someone has a story and it is based on observations, but they did not necessarily write down data.
Got it. So that's important information. It's just not as good as the studies where people are using the scientific process to collect data.
Right. The difference,
including a baseline.
Right. The difference between me saying I'm 50 and right now I don't see as many fireflies as I did when I'm 25 isn't nearly as strong as saying when I was 25, I went out 5 days a week, every week for June through August, and here's how many fireflies I counted,
yes.
And I still do it, and now I don't count as many.
Gotcha. Okay, perfect. That's a great explanation. Thank you.
So let's start with the pesticide use issue.
Good.
We do know that in addition to spraying for mosquitoes from trucks, we also can spray from planes. And those have varying amounts of efficacy, that is to say how efficient they are at killing mosquitoes. The problem is that when you broadcast an insecticide, you end up having collateral damage. So you'll target mosquitoes, but not all that precisely.
Yeah.
So other things get
trade-off,
killed.
Right?
Right.
I mean,
and,
so, yeah.
Yeah. And not only is it a trade-off, but in this case, we have something that is always going to be conspicuous by its absence. I mean, think about all the beetles and all the moths and all the other nocturnal insects that we simply cannot see at night that might be getting killed by a pesticide. Okay, that's fine and good. But once a firefly gets killed by a pesticide, you go, you know, I think there were more fireflies a couple of years back or a couple decades back. So the question is, without the baseline data, without knowing what we had, can we be sure that mosquito spraying has reduced firefly numbers? We don't know, but it's definitely a factor that needs to be considered.
Yeah, well, because that's what a pesticide is. That's what its purpose is to kill insects.
Sure, and if it isn't specific to mosquitoes, it will kill other things.
Got it, okay.
So that's the pesticide angle. The habitat alteration one is very interesting because it is multifaceted. The first thing is that most firefly larvae are aquatic or semi-aquatic. And we live in an area that's pretty darn wet.
Yes.
So if you can, again, prove that we have drained wet areas and paved them in some significant volume in, say, the last 40, 50, or 60 years.
Which then, we can.
Yeah.
Right?
So then you'd say, well, hey, now there's less habitat for larval fireflies.
Okay.
Maybe that's one reason we have fewer of them. Then getting to the adults, we have the issue of light pollution. Remember, it has to be dark in order for a male firefly and a female firefly at night to find each other.
Yep.
If there are too many artificial lights that people have made, there simply won't be mating because males and females can't find each other. So here again, you would have to look at who has built what in and around the city, you know, North Shore expansion, West Bank expansion. Are there more buildings? Are there more lights? And if there are, that might also contribute to a reduction in a local firefly population.
And then when there's more people, there are more wet areas that are not wetland, but maybe, you know, just cups in the yard and they have standing water, which mosquitoes will breed in quickly. And then we use more pesticide and then, so it's everything kind of just snowballing, right?
Yeah, yes, all of these things could be working in concert to reduce firefly numbers. Okay. And the third and last thing is that if you go to an area with fireflies in it, you will find that in an open field, especially one with really short grass, they're not going to be too terribly many. There might be an appreciable number, but not a lot. And if you go into the middle of some deep, deep woods, you'll see a few fireflies, but not a whole bunch. But what fireflies, at least in my experience, seem to like a lot is an edge where woods meet a vacant lot. Or a field that is, let's say, kind of gangly with taller, weedy plants that are 2, 4, 5 feet high.
Yeah.
They seem to like that kind of habitat and that edge. So here again, let's talk about New Orleans and its surroundings.
Okay.
Any place where there's an abandoned lot that somebody leveled and put a building on, that might be one less good spot for fireflies.
Okay.
So the habitat alteration piece of this puzzle involves less standing water for larvae, more lights that limit mating opportunities for adults, and the removal of sort of weedy open fields, if you will.
Yeah.
And
so that's like kind of reversing what we know in ecology and natural history of the edge effect being something that you just described edge, right? So the edge effect is when you have a higher number of individual organisms, a higher biodiversity at the where two different habitats come together. So in this case, you're eliminating that edge effect, and so that you think that contributes to the decline as well. That makes perfect sense.
Yeah, and as I said, if you spend time in, say, the Southern Appalachians where there's lots of fireflies, you'll see exactly the phenomenon I'm talking about with regard to where their numbers are thickest in a given area. It's pretty neat to watch.
Cool. We're going to play a game. Zach's a gamester. Hopefully, if y'all didn't listen to episode one, you will go back and listen to episode one. And if you did listen to episode one, that you made sure that you went to YouTube and watched his video of "I like big bugs and I cannot lie." So we know the character that Zach is. And this is Zach every day. It's awesome. So we're going to play a game. It's going to be a rapid fire. I'm just going to ask you some questions quickly and get your quick response. Okay.
Hey,
so
I hope they're bug questions because I'm not very good with other kinds.
All right. Well, it's going to go fast. Okay. You ready?
Yes.
It's got to be your first response.
Okay.
All right. Do you call them fireflies or lightning bugs?
Fireflies.
What do they smell like?
Like something you wouldn't want to eat.
What do you mean?
There's a pungency. It's not like an acid. I can't compare it to much of anything else, but I can. It smells like lucibufagins.
Okay,
that's
awesome.
You're
okay, that doesn't help everybody out there that has never smelled Lucibufagans. Everybody say that quickly five times. That could be your game. All right. Since they smell bad, is it okay to put them in jars when people collect them?
Well, if you put fireflies in jars for too long a period of time, you will kill them. They need to be flying and getting food, and they might actually, if the jar doesn't have a lot of ventilation, kill each other, depending on how strong those Lucibufagans are.
Chemicals, okay.
Yeah, and how concentrated they are. I think that the wonder of putting a bunch of them in a jar and seeing them is a neat thing to do, but you should do it for a few minutes and then let your fireflies go.
Okay, because we all see that in movies, so I was curious about that. Okay, what eats them?
Not many things eat fireflies. We've already referenced their defensive chemicals. They're really very powerful. He's not alive anymore, but there's a guy named Tom Eisner who kind of pioneered the field of chemical ecology, and he basically looked at every bug that smelled or tasted bad and introduced them to predators to see what would happen. I mean, frogs and toads won't eat fireflies.
Whoa.
Lizards won't, birds won't. I have seen them in the webs of some spiders before, and I'm quite certain that they've got their own parasites. And parasitoids that kill them. But off the top of my head, I can't
think
of...
But they don't eat them. Well, they would eat them, though, if it's...
Yeah, they consume them from the inside out.
From the inside out, okay. So maybe not the chemical component of the body.
Yeah, they might avoid it, or they might be immune to it. But vertebrates, you know, things with bones, I don't know any off the top of my head that eat fireflies.
All right, let's keep this going. What's their worldwide distribution?
You can find them on every continent except Antarctica. They live in tropics, subtropics, and even temperate climates.
All right, what's your favorite spot to look for them?
Western North Carolina.
Ooh. What can we do to help them?
Well, if you have any ability to control the number of lights you've got on at night, particularly if you live out in a rural area where there already might be a decent firefly population, the fewer lights, the better.
Okay.
At least for most of them. Not all species, you know, are nocturnal. There are some that don't produce light and they find their mates in the daytime. But for the ones that we've been talking about all this while, fewer lights is good. And then if you've got wetland areas that you can keep natural the way they are without draining them, that's probably going to be good larval habitat, so keep them there.
Okay. What's your favorite fact about lightning bugs? And it could be something we already talked about.
My favorite fact is that while not all of the adults bioluminesce, all larval fireflies in the world create bioluminescence.
That's cool.
And most people don't know that.
I didn't know that until I started reading up on it for this episode. So that's very cool. And a lot of times they're underground, so you don't even see that. So what's the point?
That's a very good question. And I'd never thought about that, about whether they're cryptic, whether they're hidden or not.
Yeah.
And I had a friend in from Arizona right before the pandemic, maybe 2018, a year before the pandemic. And we were somewhere in central Louisiana breaking open logs. And
we found some in there.
We found two in a log. Yeah.
Very cool. Very cool. So, all right. Anything else that jumps out at you that we need to talk about that the listeners need to know that we haven't already touched base on? Or
yes. If listeners don't know, you know, I'm in the business of exhibiting insects. And more than one person has nicely suggested that we do a firefly exhibit. Well, of course you want to do a firefly exhibit. I mean, everybody loves these things, right? It's not like we hadn't thought of it. So what's the holdup? And the holdup is husbandry, how to breed fireflies
in captivity. Okay, so what is husbandry? Okay, that well, you just
husbandry,
answered it.
The care of animals. Okay. The care of animals in captivity. And most adult fireflies live for a very short period of time as adults. But even if we only wanted a two-month-long firefly exhibit, we'd have to be raising fireflies throughout the rest of the year. And I only know of one place in the world that's ever done so repeatedly and successfully. I don't know if they still have this exhibit, but the Tama Zoo in Japan has this crazy system where they have fish in this upper pond and they let the water flow down and the poop from the fish grows algae. The algae is food for a type of snail and the snails then get washed down into like a third tier lower pond where the firefly larvae are and the snails are what the firefly larvae eat.
Wow.
So they got fish making poop, poop growing algae, snails eating algae, also firefly larvae can eat algae. Also, they can show off adults for just 8 weeks a year.
Gosh, that's a lot of work for a little bit of exhibit, but I bet it's phenomenal, and I bet a lot of people go if it's still an exhibit. If you're interested in getting involved in some kind of citizen science project, just Google your area and find out what's going on. You can also find that Audubon has a Firefly Watch community science project. If you're in Louisiana, we have botany and natural history educator of local renown, Dr. Charles Allen, who tries to count fireflies on his property, which is Allen Acres near Pickin, Louisiana, once a week, right as the sun sets. You can go to our website to find information about this event and his other educational classes, like his edible plant class.
Allen Acres is Charles's home, but it's become much more than that to naturalists in Louisiana, because he has a bed and breakfast system there. So if you want to go there and spend several days in classes, his land has been enriched with species and the like, and it's a beautiful place to go to. So if you're from outside Louisiana and you don't have any contact with Louisiana naturalists, that's a good place to start. Get your feet wet.
Yep. Well, we want to thank everybody for joining us for this episode about lightning bugs and, of course, so much more. And we hope that you will follow us on our social media at SoNatPodcast. And also, you can go to our website at lucec.loyno.edu and find a transcript, photos, and study guide for each of our episodes. See you next time!